People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. My guest this week is someone I've known for a very long time, and he is also a fellow broadcaster, but he is mostly known as a cellist and a conductor. And he is in Cape Town, or was in Cape Town, for Madiba, the African opera. I'm talking of Kutlwana Mosote, who started out in radio way back in 1999 at Classic FM, and then went to SAFM, and then back to Classic FM, and frequently visits Cape Town. So, Kutlwana, it's fine and wonderful just to get you into the studio at last in
Thank
Cape
you.
Town.
Thank you, Rodney. And just to complete that whole dance movement that I was doing, I am back at SAFM doing weekend shows of classical music.
That's right, you see. It's good to know that SAFM is upholding that.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you're doing a fine job. But do you enjoy the broadcasting side of music? Because music is very much your life, and we're going to discuss that as we go through. You come from a famous historic family musically, but do you enjoy the broadcasting angle?
I love it. I love it because I'm still dealing with music, although not performing myself, appreciating and helping others appreciate and sharing a little bit of my knowledge, my experiences with the music that I broadcast. So I absolutely love it. It's just an extension, I see it, of being a musician.
But you've also done a variety of programs, haven't you, when you were at Classic FM? I think you did the breakfast show for a while. Mm. You did a daytime show. You did a lifestyle show, all those things.
Yeah, you know, you know, it's like being a sportsman. You play where you're asked to play. And so you should be well versed in everything. You know, I particularly enjoyed the lifestyle show I used to do for Classic FM. And then I did breakfast, I think, in the last little while, 2018, 2019. And, of course, with Classic FM, I started off doing something called Classic SA, which was a local content program. So I also got to learn a lot about who's out there of my colleagues, who's recording, who's doing amazing recordings. And it was my business then to find out what exactly the state of classical music in South Africa is, and just to let the audiences know about that.
And at that stage, it was not too bad, was it? And it sort of was almost the beginning of a kind of a renaissance for local classical people.
Absolutely. I mean, remember 1999, orchestras hadn't closed down, and you know, performing arts complexes like the building that we're in, KPAB, PECT, etc. So it all kind of went down the hill in about 2000. And so it was at that time when there was a lot more support, certainly from government and the institutions that are around, be it music schools, the whole music education programs run through the Department of Basic Education, etc., were still in a very good state. I have to say some of them have been revived, but that was almost the end of a golden era of classical music.
But you know what is ironic, Kutlwana, is that happened at the very time where the vestiges of apartheid and black people learning instruments and being able to go to universities and play in orchestras was opening up. And at the very time it opened up, government and various other people started pulling back.
Politics, South African politics are very complicated. The politics of exclusivity, which classical music, let's face it, still is. I'm working here with a group of musicians where the orchestra is about 80% white, which is a fact of history, and all the singers are black, of history. So we're still trying to bridge these gaps. We're still trying to get these traditions to come together, bring them in the same room, and hopefully the more we do it, you'll see more white choristers and more black violinists. But it's going to take time. So, I mean, I think it's my short answer of it's all a process.
Yeah. You use the word there, exclusivity, which I'm sad you use. But you're right. Let's face it, you are right. But yet, there is something exclusive about classical music because it's so special. That's me trying to get around the political angle.
And I see what you mean, Rodney. You're absolutely right as well. It is, and I say this without any gendered or political, racial overtones, it is quite a fine thing, and it's not for everyone.
No, it's and, not. No matter what color you are.
Neither is jazz, neither is hip-hop.
Yeah.
So I think classical music, because of its colonial overtones that are associated with it, has this extra burden of always having to justify itself. But it is a beautiful art form, and when it's done well, and we do it well, I mean, sitting in this complex where I've been to see opera, symphony concerts, etc., and of course the broadcast of FMR, it just really drives that home.
And you, as I said at the beginning, you're very busy as a cellist and as a conductor. So apart from your broadcasting, you're very practically involved with classical music pretty well all your life.
Yeah, not the last year or so. It's been rough, Rodney, won't lie.
With the pandemic.
So we had an opera gala concert, which I conducted at the Market Theatre of all places. Full orchestra, 6 incredible soloists. And then this was last week. And then this week, as you mentioned at the top, we are doing a narrated version of an opera, a South African opera. So this is amazing, but otherwise it's been rough.
It's been very rough. Music has been hit very, very badly. We're still waiting to see our orchestra here on stage, not with Perspex screens and with the audience not wearing masks.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's horrible. So I tried out a Perspex screen at the Market to cage myself in. And it's basically what drummers use. If you've been to concerts on stage, they cage up the drummer.
Yes, yes.
And that's simply because the noise on stage, or the sound that they make on stage, is overwhelming to those sitting around them. So we decided to fly it after a day because it works well. It keeps the sound in. So I can't hear. And every time I stop and try and give instruction, everybody says, we can't hear. So we just got it. So I decided I'm going to conduct with a mask on, which I'm now used to.
Yeah. Okay. Now look, Kutswana, let's have your first piece of music. You've chosen the third movement of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. Is there a special reason for this?
It's a beautiful piece of music. You and I have actually had this discussion years ago. You feel that Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony is his masterpiece. I feel that this concerto is his masterpiece.
Well remembered. Gosh.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a much of a muchness. They're both great works. But this violin concerto is also the first piece of music that I remember falling in love with. First piece of any music, not just classical music. Because my dad used to have an LP of Ruggiero Ricci playing this and the Bruch violin concerto on the other side. And he used to play it to my sister and I when we were, I guess, I would have been 3 and my sister was 5. And we used to dance to this. It's special to me. And my son's learning it at the moment.
Oh, I want to talk about your son. Yeah. But let's listen to this first with Joshua Bell.
Thank you.
That lovely sparkling third movement of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto, that recording with Joshua Bell, and the first choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, Kutwana Mosotho. He's a cellist. But you mentioned your father just now, and I mentioned a distinguished family. Your mother and father were very important in Soweto in the classical music world, weren't they? Just share some of those, what they did. They run a symphony orchestra long before any of us knew a symphony orchestra existed in Soweto.
Yeah, you know, it's before the internet and Facebook, etc., and people posting videos. But my father was mentored by Professor Kabi Mngoma, amongst others, who Professor Mngoma had himself started a choir and and an ensemble, the Ionian Music Society, it was called. And they used to play things like Handel's Messiah, other oratorios from that Handel era. And at some point, my father got violin lessons with a gentleman called Jeff Diedrichs, later with Alan Solomon. But my father started teaching string instruments to children in 1965.
Wow.
Among the first of his crop of students were the original members of the Soweto String Quartet, all of whom he taught. And so I was born a little bit later, but grew up in this richly musical environment. My father used to work also with choirs. So a lot of choral music is in my ears, as it were. And I remember some of the great composers visiting him at home, people like Dr. Marivate, P.J. Simelane, S.J. Khoza, Professor Mngoma himself, and these old men would sit in there. And my father was much younger than them, but they'd have whiskey into the early hours of the morning, talking choral, talking symphonic, real intellectuals. Yeah. So that's the kind of musical upbringing I had. Of classical music, pure classical music. You know, when people talk about it's a privilege, I don't think anyone has had more access to classical music than I have of my generation in this country, and I mean it.
Yeah.
And so my parents also worked in music development. My father passed on about 4 years ago. My mother still kind of semi-retired, still doing the odd thing here and there. We've just done a workshop during the April school holidays with kids from various projects in Soweto. We were assisting her. So she's still active. Yeah, but great educators, great servants of their people. I really take my hat off to them.
And during that period, 1964, you said, in that when he started all this, were they not interfered with in any way by the authorities?
Well, this is it is inescapable, isn't it? That anything that was successful was labeled as a kind of covert operation of an ANC or a PAC, because my mother's father was a chap called Zef Motsepeng, who for some time was housed not too far from here across the bay on Robben Island for some years. He was the president of the PAC at the time of his death, one of the founders of the ANC Youth League, one of the founders of the PAC. He was the founding chair, actually, of the PAC when Sobukwe became the president. So I come from a family of activists.
Mm.
So, yeah, we knew those blue uniforms very well. I mean, we had to stay with my sister and I had to stay with my father's parents, because both my maternal grandparents were detained in 1977 for 6 months. My parents were also both taken away by association. So, yeah, there was always that kind of presence in our lives.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't break the spirit, clearly. They kept going.
Absolutely not.
And kept going with music and kept teaching.
Yeah. No, and, you know, their work speaks for itself. You know, my father is regarded as the godfather of black symphonic music
this
country.
That's right.
Yeah.
What is his first name, your father?
Michael.
Michael Masote, right. And your mother's name?
Sheila,
that's right, I remember.
She sends her regards.
Thank you. I remember them. They were always very friendly to me when I met them.
And I told her I would see you.
Oh, good. Please return my regards.
Absolutely.
But now, your own family, you're married with two children.
Two boys.
One of your sons is quite an accomplished violinist. Let me know a little bit about that.
So we've got two sons, as you say. Pendo is 17. He's a student at the Yehudi Menuhin School, one of 70-odd children from all over the world. He's been there since he was 13, so he's very settled in the UK. And I mean, it's a boarding school, and they don't really go anywhere. They just sit there and practice all day. So he's really gifted, and he's worked incredibly hard. My youngest son, Gaho, is a clarinetist. He decided he didn't want to play a string instrument, the weight of the pressure of being Michael Masote's grandson and Gudlano Masote's son. And he's doing great. He's more of he's a provincial cricketer. He's more of a sportsman. But, you know, we encouraged both boys to play. And even when Gaho, the younger one, didn't want to continue, I just didn't want him to come to me when he's 25 to say, why did you let me stop? So now he's on a music scholarship at school and he's doing well. He's able to find a balance between his academics, his sport, and his music.
My goodness, so the music continues to flow through the Masorte family.
It is definitely in the genes.
And your lovely wife, is she at all musical?
Not at all. However, she is
very supportive.
She is a musician in her own way.
Yeah.
You know, I've had the privilege to meet people that don't play music and don't have any training, but they're such incredible musicians. I remember when I worked with John Machikiza, the late John Machikiza, he'd come to my score and says, "This and this I need out." He knew exactly where to go, but he didn't read music, but he just had a sense of it because music was in him, and she's kind of like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And we've been together for 20 years, married for 18. I'm sure you'll remember that day in the garden in Auckland Park in, when we got married.
I remember it very clearly.
You were one of our wedding guests, right?
I was. Yeah. In the garden of the Johannesburg Country Club.
That's it. Where and I'm not a member.
Well, we allowed you in because you were special.
Yes.
Let's have another piece of music. I see now here's a famous cello piece, the Elgar Cello Concerto. It's almost pointless me asking you why you're playing this, but just say something special about it.
She was amazing. Jackie Dupre, Pablo Casals once said of her that she still needs to do some practicing. And it's true, there were people even then that played the cello better than her. But she was oozing music. She wanted to express, and she couldn't even hold it back. And I guess it's part of the tragedy and that she had a career cut short. But Jackie Dupre, at age 19, I think it was, recorded the Elgar Cello Concerto with Sir John Barbirolli conducting. And it's one of those recordings that everybody must own.
Absolutely. And you've chosen the third movement, which is the slow movement, which is the most intimate of all. And the way Jackie, well, we'll hear now the way she plays it, the sort of inward quality that she brings out, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Let's listen to Jacqueline Dupre. You know, Kutwano, they say that that movement, I read someone, it's almost as though we're embarrassed to be listening to it because it's so personal on Elgar's part that you almost don't want to listen to it. And yet it's such beautiful music, especially played like that. The third movement of Elgar's cello concerto in the famous recording with Jacqueline Dupré and the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir John Bob Rowley. Brilliant choice of my guest, Kutwano Masote. And we're chatting about his varied life in music, broadcaster, cellist, conductor. What made you take up the cello? So we've discovered that you heard the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto as the first piece you really loved. Your family were so immersed in music. Why did the cello come to the fore?
It's the cool of it.
Cool.
I mean, there were violinists all around. Father, sister, even mother played a bit of violin. I think that's how. That's why she wanted to be close to this guy, the teacher. She was an adult learner. So she played a bit and she helped teach the beginners at some point. So I wanted something different. And I remember the cellists in my dad's orchestra were always so cool. And my father said, when you're big enough, I might let you try. And so when I was about 10, 11, he let me have a go and, you know, didn't look back.
Gosh. And who would you say were some of your biggest influences with the cello? I mean, there's so many famous cellos about as well, cellists, I should say.
Yeah, so Yo-Yo Ma, without a doubt.
Oh, really? You mentioned him first, top of the list.
He's probably the most recorded classical artist, or one of. So he's done so much. Later on, he started branching off into tango, you know, the Silk Road projects, etc. But I think he set such a high bar with his earlier recordings. So he had me mesmerized as a teenager. I've still got the poster that I got at CD Warehouse in Southgate, if you know where that is, Rodney, while I was still at school, and that's a long time ago. And hearing him last year, which is the last time you and I caught up, when I was here for the concert at Kirsten Bosch, a real, real, real cellist. I love Pierre Fournier. You know, I also love the old school cellists like Fournier, Navarra, Casado, if you get hold of those recordings. About 2 years ago, I heard Gary Hoffman in Johannesburg coming to play, and it just reminded me of that old way of playing, that really honest way of playing the cello, which nobody does anymore.
It's interesting that you say Pierre Fournier, because he, I would have thought, is quite a contrast to Yo-Yo Ma. His playing is so refined.
Yes.
It's so typically French, isn't it?
So, and that's the old school of playing cello. You know, everything, they make beauty without, you know, stretching the music. It's in the sound. It's in the honest intonation. It's in the style. They really adhere to the style. Mm-hmm. Where I find in the last 30 or 40 years, 50 years, cellists have tended to want to sound like violinists, which is a completely different instrument.
Concentrating on virtuosity.
Because the technique of the cello, I mean, people became better. And they started even taking virtuoso violin pieces on the cello because now they can do it. So they kind of lost the essence of the voice of the cello, if I can put it like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's so many cellists around today, Yo-Yo Ma being the most famous, although he's almost old school.
He's late 60s.
But, I mean, I'm trying to think just offhand, there's a cellist with whom Daniel Barenboim recorded the Elgar Concerto, Alicia somebody. Do you not know? And It was interesting to listen to that recording compared to Jacqueline Dupré. And as good as she is, she's not Jacqueline Dupré.
It's almost an unfair Alicia Wallenstein. Yeah. I think it's almost an unfair comparison with the Elgar because you would struggle to find even Rostropovich to something to match just the sheer brilliance and the playing from the gut in the way that Jacqueline did. And I think for that piece. But I the point you make is valid. I listen to even violinists. Even they have changed. I listen to a lot of Ray Chen because my son loves him. And I listen to, there's a brilliant young, I think he's Spanish, cellist by the name of Pablo Ferrandez. My goodness, this guy is accurate. And he plays like a cellist, less like a violinist.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it goes through phases.
You know, we spoke of Yo-Yo Ma at Kirstenbosch, where he played the Bach orchestral suites. Is that something you've put into your repertoire? I suppose most cellists have to get to it.
Well,
he said, laughing nervously.
I certainly never planned to play them all in one sitting, not even at home.
Yes.
And this guy did it.
Yeah.
Aged 65. I mean, it was. He blew everyone away. Didn't take a break. Yes, I learned the first three. The last three, they're a next step up. I just never got to them. But this guy did it. Yes, I love the Bach suites. Everyone must learn them. If you play violin or cello, you should learn the ones for your instrument. The violists get to learn both. It's very intimate. It's almost religious, if I can call it that.
That's a good description.
You know, because Bach himself was so religious. And I think everything that he did for the glory of God.
Yeah,
and you can hear it in the music that he's writing about something greater than just the sounds that will come off the page.
Our mutual friend Susan Koch said something that I've never forgotten about the Bach cello suite. She said, when you listen to them, it's like listening to an old wise man who knows everything about the world and the universe. And you just listen. You don't want him to stop.
And when you hear them as often as I've heard them, there's always something new that you're taking away. I mean, it really is probably the handwriting of God, if you like.
Gosh, that's a new one. Yeah. I shall quote you. May I quote you on that?
Please do. Just <Let's>, credit.
Yes, let's have another piece of music. Some choral music, the Hallelujah Chorus.
My father loved the Messiah. He grew up singing the Messiah. I think it's kind of like the gateway drug into classical music, Handel's Messiah, because everybody knows the Messiah and everybody has a favorite piece from the Messiah. And my father, amongst his many achievements, he translated the Messiah into South African languages, a version called the South African Messiah. This is not the version we're going to listen to, but I think the Hallelujah Chorus is without a doubt the most famous piece of classical music.
Hallelujah, 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 for the Lord God,
It is rather magnificent, isn't it? The Hallelujah Chorus, which ends part two of Messiah by Handel. That, I suppose, we could these days call a politically incorrect version, because everything now is paired instruments and, you know. But that was Otto Klemperer conducting the Philharmonia Choir and Orchestra, and a really fantastic version too. Thanks. That's Kutwano's third choice here on People of Note this week on Fine Music Radio, Kutwano Masorte. We spoke about your cello career, and then suddenly I started seeing that you were conducting. What caused that? Was it something you wanted to do?
No, in fact, I was dragged kicking and screaming to conducting lessons by my friend, the late John Machigiza. I met John in about 1999. He needed to put together a small string ensemble to perform his father's music, Todd Machigiza, who'd been a choral composer, a jazz musician, and of course, author and journalist. And John wanted to do a retrospective on his father's work. And it turned out we're neighbors in Melville, Johannesburg at the time. So we just started meeting regularly, exchanging ideas. And John would end every meeting with, "When we find the money, we're going to stage this concert and you are going to conduct." And I'd laugh and leave.
Because you'd presumably never done any conducting.
Because I'd never conducted. I mean, I'd helped out with youth orchestras and things.
In the bar.
Yeah, and just helped my dad out, etc., when he was still conducting. So the moment came in 2006 when Brad Holmes of Arts Alive and Baseline up in Johannesburg found money to do a mayoral opening of the festival, the Arts Alive Festival. And he turned to his friend John to say, "Look, I think we could do something around your dad's music." And John gave me a call. We went to a meeting with Brad, and Robert Brooks also was there of Miyagi. And it was decided then that I would conduct, to which I said, "But I can't conduct." And so there was a budget set aside for me to be sent to Robert Maxime, who mentored me and prepared me for that. Robert Maxime, of course, is a wonderful musician. And I learned more than just about conducting from him, his life experience. As you know, Rodney, he can certainly tell a story.
Oh, yes.
And so that's how it came about. As I say, I was dragged there kicking and screaming. So we did our first concert doing the music of Machigiza with orchestra and choir, and also the music of Ladysmith Black Mambazo, which Issa Grew had orchestrated, and they did that whole project, which was Grammy nominated, actually, with Ladysmith Black Mambazo and the English Chamber Orchestra. So we repeated that, not with the English Chamber Orchestra. And so that was my first conducting gig. I enjoyed it so much, I decided I wanted to do it again.
But now, you have also conducted, I want to say, proper concerts with concerto, overture, symphony. You've done that as well as the more lighter stuff.
Right. So, part of my life's mission is to take away these overtones around exclusivity, colonial, around classical music. So one finds oneself doing a lot of cross-cultural projects, because one of the other things that I do, and I do quite well, is arrange and orchestrate.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that, because that's an art in itself.
It is. It's not just transcribing, it's arranging, it's giving a new sound, a new life to the work. So I've used those skills to create more work for myself so that I can conduct. And as I mentioned earlier, we did an opera gala concert in Johannesburg. It was Bellini, Mozart, Mascagni, etc., with six incredible singers. And so I can, get stuck into that repertoire. Of course, coming from a symphonic background myself, I'm not a singer, so I love the operatic stuff, but I also enjoy conducting the traditional symphonic music, along with the cross-cultural and newer compositions.
Mm-hmm. So are you still playing the cello?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Hardly, Rodney, I have to be honest. And I don't have an excuse. I used to make the excuse that I was very busy. I've had a year where I stayed home, literally, and I did very little celloing. It was just also in, I guess, how one was feeling throughout those hard lockdowns. It was difficult to do anything. I got ahead with other work, But yeah, I think once you leave it for a long time, it's very difficult to go back to it because you know what it should feel like.
Yes. And you spent so many years in the front desk, weren't you, of orchestras in Johannesburg?
Yeah.
With the cello?
Yes, front, middle, back. Yes, but yes, I think the point you're trying to get across, Rodney, is that I know what to do when, with cello in hand. And one invested a lot. I mean, I studied at the Manuhin Academy in Switzerland, handpicked by Yehudi Manuhin himself, played great deal of chamber music in those days, mm-hmm. and when I came back to South Africa. I do miss it. I have to say I enjoy the conducting role as well because I get to influence programming. I get to also mentor younger musicians, which is something obviously that I saw others do before me that I'm also very passionate about.
Oh, that's good news because there are some people who don't like teaching. So you enjoy that aspect
so
as well.
Mentoring and teaching
are different.
The same thing, but I don't give lessons. I don't have beginners come and show them how to hold the bow. I did it for a very short time at my parents' project in Soweto. And Abel Seladra, I don't know if you know who he is, Standard Bank Young Artist, a few years ago, doing really well as a cellist and does all the throat singing, jazz. He's based in the UK. And he's a boy that I taught. So the very little bit of teaching that I did has yielded great fruit.
You seem so happy and confident and positive and relaxed with your life.
Yeah, so I'm 48 years old now. I'm not the young man you met 25 plus years ago, right?
I remember very clearly.
Yeah, and I think the last year has also taught me many lessons about why we're here. Parenting teaches you a lot as well. But I'm glad it's coming through. I do feel good at the moment. One goes through ups and downs in life. But I guess now I'm starting to feel also that I'm starting to enjoy some of the hours put in early in my life. I find that even when I get into sticky situations, whether it's in rehearsal, whether it's in other areas of my life, I navigate them much more easily and actually gracefully as well. So, yeah, it's a good place to be.
Good. We're going to have another piece of music now involving a cello. This it's not an arrangement, is it? It's Songs Without Words by Mendelssohn, Opus 109 for cello and piano. You say original.
It's an original piece. It's one of four original pieces that he wrote, Mendelssohn, for cello and piano, or piano and cello, some people would like to say. He wrote the two sonatas, which are definitely for piano and cello. He wrote a set of variations, and then this piece, which is his last published piece, the Songs Without Words in D major, Opus 109.
Song Without Words by Mendelssohn, Opus 109, in that arranged, well, it's not an arranged, I keep saying that, an original work for cello and piano. Another choice of my guest on People of Note this week on Fine Music Radio, the conductor, cellist, and broadcaster, Kutwano Masote. And Kutwano, you recently left Classic FM because there are major problems there, and you went to the SABC, to SAFM, and that's where you are now.
Yes, I do weekend programming. My show is called Weekend Sundown of Classics, and it's from 4 to 7 in the afternoons on a Saturday and Sunday, which is a great slot. And I think the thinking there was that most radio stations play R&B and that kind of old school sort of 70s, 60s, 80s music at that time on a weekend. Even 702, your talk radio stations have that music.
That golden oldie thing.
Yeah, so your solid gold sound. And so SAFM thought that there is possibly an audience that is looking for something different at that time, and it's a good time, especially on a Saturday, for people to be listening to classical music.
Do you compile your own shows?
I compile my own shows, which means I have free rein, as it were, as to how I want to, you know, have the program. No interviews, perhaps in the future, if, you know, we get out of, you know, limiting people in and out of studio. So at the moment, it's just music.
Gosh, that sounds wonderful, actually. And I'll have to tune in, I suppose, if I can remember where SAFM is. But listen, we're coming towards the end of the program now. And it's been, as I mentioned earlier, a joy to talk to you because of your positiveness and your relaxed attitude towards all this thing that can sometimes create all sorts of tensions and problems among people and organizations. But I know it's unfair, but I'm going to ask you, what do you think about the future of classical music? Are we going to have orchestras and opera companies? Do we have a place for our younger people to go in the future?
I think there is a groundswell of young people, especially black people, previously disadvantaged people in South Africa, learning classical instruments. Singing, I mean, I don't even have to say. It's probably opera singing is our best export in this country. So there's certainly interest, there's greater access. I think it can only translate to a healthy industry further down the value chain. So it's up to us that are the current custodians as the leaders in the industry to make sure that we continue to grow the opportunity and the spaces for young people to come in much more easily. This doesn't mean dropping standards, but I do think the classical music is probably in a better place than it was 20 years ago, because now there is a projection that we can make. Mm. We've been through the dips and the troughs, and now we can look at what's around. Funding, of course, public funding is still very unreliable. So it's up to, you know, corporate South African private individuals to keep making sure that the young people have access to education opportunities. And I'm sure that further down the line, it will translate into a healthy classical music, whether it's opera, ballet, symphonic environment.
This is very good to hear from you, Kutwan. I'm presuming you're being absolutely honest.
I really am. I mean, there's, you know, everybody used to talk about busk aid. Mm. They still do, but they talk about other projects as well. And the children that didn't go to busk aid that are also doing well. So, there are middle-class families that don't need a project like busk aid, but hopefully we'll keep funding those and supporting those initiatives in addition to private initiatives.
And as you also say, it's now more important for the public sector to support orchestras. Mm. The government clearly has other things to do.
Look, the government is, they have different priorities. They have to feed children at schools. They have to build houses, build roads, etc. And the arts should rank a little bit higher than they do. Perhaps that switch will come on not too long from now.
And let's hope that in the meantime, not too many young musicians leave this country.
Well, you know, it's like saying the best cricketers shouldn't go and play at IPL and rather turn out for the Lions. You can't stop them. They are ambitious. If the opportunities are there, same with the singers, same with young violinists. You know, I mentioned earlier that I have a young son who's a teenager, playing already at a high level and studying at a prestigious school. Should he come back? I don't know. I'm telling both my children that they should be excellent in whatever they do so that they can be employable anywhere. They shouldn't be bound by their passport to live where it says they can live. Just be good enough to get employment anywhere. And if anywhere includes Cape Town, Johannesburg, so be it.
And there's some positive begin to end now, Kutwano. Thank you very much for that chat. And I'm sorry I missed your opera that was here, the narrated version of Madiba, the African opera. But you never know, it may come back and it may be online. But your last piece of music is a Paganini Caprice, which is slightly unexpected because of the violin.
Yeah. So I love violin music. I'm surrounded by violinists, raised by one, father to one. You know, one of my best friends you'll know is Samson Diamond, Caius Oprea and Sigrun Oprea, mutual friends of ours. So I'm surrounded by violinists. And yeah, I chose this one because it's something short and to the point, quite humorous. And my son is also playing it. So I've heard it in the house when he was home.
And not torn your hair out.
No, yeah. But I think it's a lovely piece to just say goodbye with. And thank you so much, Rodney, for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. My guest, Kutwano Mosotho. Here's Paganini's Caprice number 13. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.